I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other Podcast from AlanaBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. My guest tonight, today, whenever you're listening to this, is Tyler from the site. So we've done this the last 3 years, okay? After 2021, Tyler and I recorded a therapy session. We had just lost to Loyola. We needed to work it out. It was like over an hour and a half. We just needed to talk it through. We did the same thing the last 2 years of postseason therapy session. What do we call this one? check in with the therapist when things are going good.
Usually you call this a postmortem, but I don't get that sense. I mean, I'm
right.
It's been a long time since I've been more at peace with the overall end of the basketball season.
Yeah.
You know, 30-0 run notwithstanding. This has a completely different vibe compared to the last couple of years. This is going to be more of a celebration of the season.
Yes. Yeah. I wrote the article on Tuesday. Like, the last time I was this content after a season, it's probably 2004. I mean, maybe 2013, we felt pretty good. We almost made the Sweet 16. You know, maybe that was close to this. But
yeah,
Elite Eight is a lot different than losing in the second round.
Yeah, we all thought the arrow was pointing up in 2013. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, yes. But it's like, that was still an 8-10 Big Ten season, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that we got a 7 seed is kind of crazy. We had a losing record in the Big Ten. Penn State went 9-11 the Big Ten this year and had zero chance of making the Sweet 16 or making the tournament, making the NIT, making anything. So, I think that's where we start here, right? Elite Eight. As much as that loss hurt, as hard as it was to watch 30-0 run, Elite Eight is Elite Eight. It's a big deal. I was thinking the other day, remember they used to do that tournament the following year? Where they took the eight teams from the do you remember what they called that?
No,
I can't remember.
They should start that.
They should. Maybe next year. That immediately next fall, because it was like this big deal of like, oh yeah, that means we get in that tournament. Like, this example won't mean anything to people. Golf does this, NCAA golf. You make the final four. I remember after Illinois lost to Florida State in the quarterfinals. Back in May at Greyhawk, there was a little bit of disappointment they wouldn't be in the Eastlake Cup this fall, which the top four teams from the previous year get to play at Eastlake in Atlanta, and they televise it on the Golf Channel. And, you know, it's this like little bonus for making the final four of match play in NCAA golf. It used to be that same case that they would take those eight teams from the Elite Eight the year before, and you would get a tournament in November with just those eight teams. And it would be really fun to be in that. But still, Elite Eight, I don't know. Like, it's going to be the shortest therapy session ever. How are things going? Great. How's your job? Great. How's marriage? Great. Okay. And the kids? Great. All right. We'll see you next week. You know, I don't even know what we really talk about besides celebrating the season, like you said.
Yeah, it's one of those. Everything is viewed through the lens of expectations, right? And when you start a season ranked 25th, I think in the AP.
Yep.
Picked, I mean, we're in the preseason poll, third, fourth. So I forget exactly.
That's a good question. I don't know.
But I mean, you frame it that way. If you finish second in the Big Ten, but I think every Illinois fan, because of our recent history, frames the beginning of every year with the expectation of we got to make the Sweet 16. We got to make the Sweet 16. And then when you go one past that, then like you said, it's just like, how can you feel anything but content, regardless of the circumstances that we watched on Saturday? You know, you go back, everyone says, well, if at the beginning of the season, if you told me we would have been an Elite Eight, then I'll be a happy man. Yes, that is exactly how it played out.
Right. Right. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Like we were like number 10 or maybe we were like number 8 in early January. We climbed into the top 10. I think we got as high as number 8 before playing Purdue, something like that. But then we bounced between 10 and 14, 10, 12, then we're 11, then we're 13, then we're 10. In KenPom, we were shockingly stuck right there. I mean, usually you move around a little bit in KenPom. We were like between 10 and 13 for like all the rest of January, all of February, and all of March. It looks like, you know, unless Alabama has two great games or something and passes us, it looks like we'll finish exactly 10th. You know, we talked in January about how like, oh, you know what? There's basically two good teams in the Big Ten. Those two teams went to, as of right now, Final Four and Elite Eight. You know, easily the class of the conference. Purdue won the regular season title. We won the conference tournament. You know, easily 1-2 the whole year. Purdue clearly won. They beat us twice. Us clearly too. We beat mostly everyone else. And it just played out like that, that we then made the Elite Eight. And, you know, it's like this, like, really weird, scripted, straight down the only really thing that could go either way was a top 10 matchup with Iowa State, and we won it. And that put us a step beyond that 10. We were one of the 8 best teams in the country. But we had these defensive concerns that emerged in February, and, you know, and we had this big long run on offense, and both things kind of fell apart during the same 8 minutes of basketball, and here we are. But yeah, it's this shockingly, like, every metric from KenPom to the voters to everything else is pointing us to being around the 10th best team, the top 10 team in the country. We made the Elite Eight and bowed out there. You know, it's like perfectly aligned with what we were capable of.
I think maybe the only question that I could look back at, and I guess it's hard to put this in words because it ended up playing out almost to the same level that we expected. But prior to Terrence's suspension, I remember walking out of the Enterprise Center in St. Louis after the Missouri game and just being awestruck by this team and listening to Missouri's coach Dennis Gates afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a sense when coaches are after a game or what, you know, when they give their synopsis of a team, and you can get a sense if they're just kind of doing coach speak or if they're genuinely impressed. And he was legitimately impressed by how well we played that night. And of course we all know, you know, 4 days later, Terrence was suspended and we had that 3 week lull in between where we were playing without Terrence. And then it took him a little while to reintegrate after coming back from suspension or his after his legal appeal. And so I guess the only question I have is if we'd have run the table through the entire year without that, would our arc have been different? I mean, of course it would have been different because some games, you know, would have gone different ways. Did we lose to Maryland at home? Probably not. That kind of thing. So I just wonder if that little hiccup in the middle had any bearing on the overall arc of the team. But again, it's hard to argue that point because you ended up in the Elite Eight, which is basically what, as you were saying, the where we were slotted per the efficiency rankings and the polls, you know, throughout the year. We basically played after getting to that point, we played to our expectations and we got beat by the best team in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That is an interesting what if. I mean, sometimes I think of that, you know, sometimes I go the other way with it of like, did those 7 games, excuse me, I gotta go get some water. Did those 7 games without Terrence help, you know, fortify some things that wouldn't have been there, wouldn't have been something we could turn to against Iowa State or whatever? You know, did that end up being better for us than it was because we had to learn how to do a few things and how to lean into mask and everything else? So, you know, it's the same as like, as we were talking in the car after the Big Ten tournament, when we were recording the podcast with the boardroom guys, like, how do we look at, you know, okay, yes, it looks like we got a horrible bracket or whatever, but then how do you look at it the backwards of like, wow, we could have been playing Gonzaga. The only reason we didn't play Gonzaga is because they had to switch BYU and Gonzaga because BYU couldn't play on Sunday. So we got out of that there. Then BYU loses to Duquesne. We get a lucky hot team that was about ready to fall apart in Duquesne. You know, we get Iowa State, which you were standing right there with me when I was begging for Iowa State to be our, you know, like everything started to fall into place. I just thought Iowa State's a team we can beat because they lean so heavily defense, and we're one of the few teams that can overcome that and won't fall victim to that. And that's why I wanted Iowa State so bad, and that's who we got. And we could have gotten any of these other teams. And then you look at these 11 seats. We got Duquesne. We could have gotten NC State, right? You know, we could have gotten any of these other teams that made runs, six seeds that got to the Sweet 16, you know, that type of thing. Like, as it turned out, we got the ideal tournament run for us to set up to get us the Elite Eight.
But on the other side, and this, I remember looking at the bracket with you too, everyone was focused on the whole BYU thing, that they were underseeded. And I was going to be unfair, and you had mentioned Iowa State, but no one was making the point of, you know, UConn's sitting right there. And that's, you know,
yes.
I don't think it, yeah. You know, our theory is to be so fatalistic and say, well, let's not even worry about UConn. We, you know, let's worry about not getting beat in the second round by an underseeded BYU team when it ultimately we should have been looking at, dang it, we drew the best team in the tournament,
yes.
Maybe the best team of in any tournament of recent history.
And we drew them 89 miles from their campus.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. So I guess the main thing I wanted to go over as we do this is to, excuse me, is to just talk about like what's put to bed, if you will. Like, I don't want to make too much of the Sweet 16 thing. I don't want to make too much of the, you know, we talked about it, and yes, we had to get to the second weekend. But something about making the Elite Eight and something about winning the Big Ten tournament, you know, that now you can look at these first 5 years of the 2020s and say, you know, 2020, one game out of a share of a Big Ten title. 2021, half game out of a share of a Big Ten title and a Big Ten tournament title. 2022, an actual Big Ten title. 2023 was what it was. It was the down year of these five, but that down year was still a 9 seed. You still had those two huge wins, one in Vegas, one in New York City, that carried the day when it was time to see who made the tournament, and it got us a 9 seed. Fine, that was a step back year. But then this year, second in the Big Ten regular season, win the Big Ten tournament, get all the way to the Elite Eight. So once you stack all of that together, I think every ounce of angst is put to bed. I think we have this ridiculous winning streak over Wisconsin. We have this ridiculous winning streak over Michigan. We're clearly in the first 5 years of this decade, we're clearly 1-2 with Purdue. We have one more win in the conference than Purdue. You know, that by the time somebody's listening to this, Purdue might have won a national title, which is obviously carries different amount of weight. But, you know, it's obviously those are the 1-2 teams in the Big Ten right now, which feels great to be back in that conversation. So I feel like every ounce of everything is put to bed now, and we look ahead toward, okay, time to get back to the Final Four, time to build another super team, time in the next 5 years to piece it all together so that when Merez Johnson and Jeremiah Fears are junior, sophomore or something, and you find the right transfer, maybe you have a top five team and it's time to make a deep, deep run. I just feel like we're there. I feel like we're done talking about everything else. It does not matter. It's time to look forward. I'm not saying next year isn't a non-tournament team. We don't know how the portal's going to go. We're losing what, 85% of our scoring or whatever? It could go poorly.
Look that up. 81%.
Oh, sorry, 81%. I apologize for my gross,
Yeah, get it.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I in my mind, say next year is an NIT team. Say next year is a, man, it just didn't piece together like thought it would piece together, and it's the season Ohio State just had or whatever. I'm fine with that. Like, I'm not going to be happy, but I'm at peace with where the program is, and my brain switches to, okay, it's time to start tinkering toward how do we get all the pieces to fall together at once like we did in 2021, like we kind of did this year, that we have the older, mature, well-established team built in the culture with enough players who have been around for a while that can really hit the accelerator and move us to that next level. And so, yeah, I'm just there. I know I'm going on too long, and I know you have some things to say, but my last thing is, like, Purdue had that season after Carson Edwards left. So this would have been after, what, 2019. So, you know, they got to the Elite Eight. Virginia hit that stupid, ridiculous buzzer beater to send it to overtime, and then beat Purdue in overtime to get to the Final Four and eventually win the national title. Purdue fans were devastated. The next year for Purdue wasn't a tournament team. They were something like 17-15 or whatever going. Like
Ivy's freshman year or
yes,
something like that.
Yes, they just had to. That Carson Edwards team, most of them had graduated and left, and it was time to rebuild. But for Purdue fans, they switched to, okay, time to really go kind of thing, you know. And that down year for them wasn't much because then they were starting to build what you're seeing here, what you're seeing now, what they've been the last 2 years, where their program has taken that next step. And I feel like that's where we're at. This was kind of our 2019. It's different now with the portal, and we can talk about that, but that's where we're looking as we look toward this next year.
Yeah, I mean, lots of things to cover there, but it's
talk about the seven things I just covered.
It's a fascinating dynamic for me. I mean, like you said, I believe we're there too. I mean, unless you choose to pay attention to the fringe lunacy of social media that's still going to find fault with, yeah, we got to the Sweet 16, but we played two double-digit seeds to get there. And yeah, you won an Elite Eight game, but you were lucky to win that. And then when you finally got to the big dance, the big chance, you kind of crapped the bed and you gave a 30-0 run. And that just showed that, you know, this coach doesn't have the, you know, that, if you're going to listen to that, then you'll drive yourself crazy. But like you, that's just, as I said, fringe lunacy. And we're not going to even really honor that with any discussion. But what I think, and I'll use Purdue because as you brought it up, I think it's a really fascinating example, because what Purdue has done is really leaned into their culture, but also what Matt Painter wants to do. He wants to find a gigantic human being and build a team around him. And while as Underwood has continued to tinker with the model, we had that dynamic or gigantic human being. And then after seeing how that didn't work as well in the tournament setting, after we got housed by Houston, Underwood got a little bit of wanderlust with respect to, wow, that Houston team and all those interchangeable athletes, I really like that. So I'm going to go recruit that direction. And so that's what we've been the last couple of years, this kind of interchangeable athletes in positional size, as he would call it. That's been the focus the last couple of years. But now it seems when you have Purdue and Edie and you have UConn and Klingon and you have NC State and their big guy, it's like there's this pendulum and swinging back the other way. And do you want to then, how do you then build your team moving forward with the transfer portal? Do you try to, you stick with this positionless athlete kind of philosophy? Or do you swing back the other way and you do try to bring in some size, because ultimately that kind of hamstrung you against the team when you met that kind of athlete or that kind of player in the tournament. So how Underwood chooses to move forward is fascinating to me. Will he continue to be a chameleon and change as he's been so wont to do based on what he's recruited you know, and he adapts his style to what the roster's in front of him, which I think is a strength, not a feature, not a bug. Or will he change his overall philosophy and swing back the other way? I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's kind of exciting to think about that. Whereas, you know, 2 years ago, you know, you and I were on this podcast before the 2022 fall of 22, the 2022-23 season, talking about that Houston thing and that, you know, the idea he wants that, and that's what, you know, Matthew Meyer and the other people he had recruited were part of that kind of let's get some length and he's going to lean into Coleman Hawkins, all that kind of stuff. When we had that discussion, it was a different kind of like, will this work? Will, like, oh gosh, what are the pitfalls there? And, you know, there was always this questioning of like, is it too much? Should we stick to one thing? Should, you know? And now after this Elite Eight and after the way this whole season went, I just have this, it's not like a trust in Underwood, like, oh, he's a miracle worker. You can take 13 nobodies and build a great team. It's just, I don't have the anxiety that I had before as to, oh no, but what if that doesn't work? I just kind of have this sit back and, well, that'll be fun to see how that goes, you know?
Yeah, because you've seen it be successful in so many different ways. Yes. In each of the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
In its own way.
Yes. So it's almost exciting. Like, okay, what's the next gift I'm going to open? You know, what's, you know, hey, Uncle Jim is a really good gift giver and I got another present from him this year. This is pretty exciting. Let's open this one and see what this is. Is he going to give me a pocket knife and trust me with that? You know, like there's this kind of different approach, at least in my mind, toward how we're going to build the next thing. That's exciting. Even if, and I mean this, and I will point back to this, if it is, you know, even if next year is a, look, we got to shift some things. You're not really going to see the result of those things until the 2026 season, but trust me, 2025 is building somewhere. And, you know, if you're ready for Merez Johnson to be Big Ten Player of the Year in 2026, then, you know, hang on and we're going to get there and we're going to build around that kind of thing. So, you know, that's the excitement that I have.
Yeah. And I would love to be in the room when Underwood and his staff are tinkering and think, okay, this worked in 2021, but on the same aspect, here's something that didn't work. And then next year, this worked and this didn't work. And this year mostly worked, but then we ran into a situation where size got us again. And kind of, I feel like they're in their lab thinking, okay, what if we got a big guy, but also combined with positional size, and we did the best of both worlds, and we could play both styles. And, you know, if you get guys to buy in and you get a situation where one night your big guy might get 35 minutes and one guy, your big guy might get 18 and vice versa, that kind of stuff. And I just wondered, I'm excited to see where the experiment, how it continues to evolve. Because I think if nothing else, we talked about the portal, with what seems to be a pretty robust NIL program and this track record of transfers having success here, I almost expect, I have no insight into which players will end up here, but I always suspect that we're going to have a pretty good shot at bringing in some high level, high impact type transfers each year moving forward.
Yeah. And, you know, next year is interesting to me. Of, you know, this year we went out and got what, a sixth year, a fifth year, and a fifth year, like a 23-year-old, a 23-year-old, and a 24-year-old kind of thing. Because with getting Hawkins back and getting Shannon back, it was obvious of like, we got one run at this. Let's go get a Guerrier, a Damask, and a Harmon. I haven't talked all day, so I haven't brought my cough out of them.
Yeah.
The other side of that now is this build going to be a 2-year thing? Like, you know, added the orange hair added Jake Harris out of the portal so far. You got a shooter, but he'll be a sophomore. He's got 3 more years of eligibility. So you went out and got a piece that's, you know, for the next several years, not just for next year. Is that going to be a trend? You know, the boardroom guys tweeted that the other day of like, you know, if you look at some of the names Illinois is tied with, none of them are seniors like Guerrier, Damask, and Harmon. Is this a, okay, it's time. Yes, we're going to go back to the portal, but we're going to go back to the portal for sophomores and juniors, not for one-year players, because, you know, this was a crest and the next wave will crest in 26 or 27. And we're preparing for that as of right now. You know,
I think what you said earlier was the circumstances worked out to make this year appealing to older guys. Like we had Coleman coming back. We had Terrence Shannon coming back. And so, yeah, you're not going to put a bunch of freshmen and sophomores with those guys. You're going to try and supply that or complement that with more savvy, more experience. Whereas, okay, yeah, maybe to use a baseball analogy, you're trying to get guys with more years of control, you know, under their belt. So you can, as the old adage goes, you want to get old and then stay old. So how do you do that? Well, you bring in guys who are, like you said, have some seasoning and looking to move up, and you get freshmen or sophomores. But then it's double-edged sword because what if those guys get unhappy and then they transfer out again? So it's, again, it continues to be this fascinating dynamic of trying to build a roster. And so, yeah, it's as you said, who knows about next year, because it all depends on what this month ends up being from a portal perspective. But, yeah, I do wonder if it's going to be a situation where you're like, let's build this as opposed to let's keep trying to win the lottery each year.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So if we're going to invest, how do you think we will invest? You know, so let's just go through what we have. We have, again, could change tomorrow. You have Dane in the portal. You've lost the five seniors. So really, all you have is Luke Goody, if he returns. And I have to say if he returns for every single player. Mm. You have DGL. You have Hansberry. You have Moretti. Who am I missing? Am I missing?
You have Morez coming in.
Yes. You have Morez Johnson, and you have the two other freshmen. Jace Butler, Jackson, Jaxtus. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know if it's Jaxtus or Jaxtus. I don't know.
That's one of those great, like, you know, is it Dinja? What is that guy's name? That guy who's coming in? No, you never know. Carmen and I do that all the time with football players. We had the debate of whether it was Dre Gibbs Loghorn or Dra Gibbs Loghorn, because he just went with DRA. So you've already gone with one shooter from Mercer, who turned out to be a little better shooter than, you know, maybe should have had a high major offer, but just a sophomore, probably has a long way to go defensively and everything else in the Big Ten. So where are you going in the portal? What are you thinking of? You know, next year's team is very young as of right now. You're leaning heavily into Hansberry and Merez Johnson as your front court, but that's a sophomore and a freshman, a really good freshman, and maybe one of our best freshmen in years, but still a freshman. So where are you leaning?
Well, I guess to answer that question, I don't know to what degree the staff values where the freshman guards are, you know, since Sir Harris is going to come back, is Dre Loghorn, is he a piece that you're going to build around from as far as a lead guard? Because if not, then you probably need some sort of playmaking guard in some aspect, whether it's using what they did with Marcus Domask in a booty ball situation, or you just have a traditional kind of lead guard situation. I think you need that unless you Underwood and the staff say, you know, hey, we know that Dre is ready to take the next step, and when we're ready to roll with that. And I don't know the answer to that question. Sure. But that's it. You're going to get a playmaking guard. You're going to have to replace the Shannon's role. You're going to need a high. I think that's where you're going to make your big splash. Some sort of high impact wing player. And I think you also need some sort of traditional back to the basket center, because you need that in some cases. You need a Dane, you know, maybe not every game, but you need a back to the basket player, at least it's in your rotation in some capacity. I think those are probably the three main things. It's some sort of a lead guard, a high impact wing scorer, traditional, you know, and then some sort of back to the basket big man.
It's so funny that one, I can't remember if it was Nebraska game in the Big Ten tournament or the Wisconsin game, the one where Dre faked the three and made the little acrobatic reverse layup.
That was
And you and I looked at each other like, whoa. And
yeah,
you know, we're sitting right next to each other. And for me, I mean, it's one play, right? But for me, it was this reminder, you know, let's rewind all the way back to the first time I saw this team. They had an open practice before the trip to Europe. And in that open practice, I went back and I wrote only about Dre. I'm like, this kid is athletic. Like, I see why he was at one time a top 50 recruit. I understand he changed high schools, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it didn't work out at the private high school he went to. So he went to another one and there's all this things. But then you see him make these athletic plays of like, wow, he's got some hops. He's got some burst. He has some real athleticism. And that one reverse layup in that one game made me think like, oh, wow, yeah, I remember now. Like, that's that, you know, I think this kid has a really bright future. Might not happen until 2026, but I think this kid has a really bright future. So that, like, that one single play kind of changed my offseason. Yeah, like, wait, he can get to
before the transfer portal became a thing, all we used to talk about was this sophomore leap. It's all we ever wanted.
Yep.
But now you don't get sophomores anymore very often.
I had that conversation with somebody else the other day that, like, if the Hansberry last 4 minutes of the UConn game had happened in any other year with no transfer portal, it's all we would be like, there was his moment. There was the light bulb. Now just watch for his sophomore year. You know, you forget he can hit threes. You forget he's a high IQ passer. He's got great hands. Like, here we go, you know, this and that. And now it's like, well, hopefully he sticks around and we can build around that. And hopefully he's here 4 years like Coleman was, and you can develop him like that. I mean, it's part of the brilliance of what Purdue has done, right? Like, you know, they don't have people transferring out, and they, you know, keep that system together, and they use their Ethan Mortons the same way every year, and they use their firsts and their Gillises, and, you know, they just make the whole thing go.
And the human being in waiting that they'll have.
Yes. Yes.
One, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. excuse me. So
what do you think? I mean, to ask the same question back at you, what do you think that the team?
I am of the opinion that they know, my opinion is that they know any efforts to do this same thing with the 2025 team without a Shannon and a Hawkins returning would get into like a cycle of not really being able to, as you said, win the lottery every year. I feel like they are going to look at this and say, look, we could go find Damask, Guerrier, and Harmon again, put them with what we have, lean heavily into those guys, but then they leave and you're in the same problem again. So I think that boardroom tweet was really smart. I think they are looking at juniors and sophomores in the portal of a kind of a multi-year, get it really rolling by the end of next year, and then by 2026 really have something that you can move forward with. Like, I think I'm very high on Merez. I think he's a two-and-done player, maybe a three-and-done player. I think he has potential conference player of the year. I think he's just that athletic and that good and can be what you really, really build around in 2 years as a sophomore or in 3 years as a junior. And so I think that they are thinking like that. You know, that's why I said, like, sounds stupid to do this in the transfer portal era, but in my mind, with Fears verbaled and with Merez verbaled, if you can get junior Merez and sophomore Fears, like, that's your really make a run at a team. Put any pieces around that, you know, keep guys like Hansberry 4 years, keep guys like keep Dre 4 years, even a Moretti sticking around and being the crafty guy for 4 years. You know, if you can do that, then that's the you had Io and Kofi together for this kind of thing with a couple senior guards like Trent and DeMonte. You know, it's that kind of thing for me.
I guess my only hesitation on that is because I'm equally as high on Merez, except for the fact that it's rare that a guy from that position on the floor has a dominant effect on college basketball. It's either your guards, your wings, or your traditional centers. I think of the old Michigan State, their Draymond Greens and stuff, where they would have those guys, and they would
Miles Bridges.
I'm sorry,
Miles Bridges,
and then the other guy who was drafted by Memphis. His name escapes me.
Zach Randolph, are you thinking?
No, more recent vintage. Okay. He blocked the shot against us the year that they beat us.
When Io went down on an injury,
yeah, that game? Yeah.
Oh God, I can't think of his name either.
It'll come to me tomorrow morning.
Yep.
But I just to dominate from the. I'm trying to think of a dominant position player from that position on the floor. I mean, there's lots of great players in that position, but do they have the impact in college basketball like a lead guard with the ball in their hands, or a center who back to the basket like a Klingon or Zach Edey or whatever? So that's my only hesitation on that. Even though I think he's going to be an all league guy as a freshman team, and probably an all league guy, as you say, you know, as a sophomore and potentially a junior. But can you dominate from that position on the floor? I don't. That's my only hesitation with that standpoint. But
I get it. Yeah, again, this is a conversation that if we were having it a year ago today, would feel a little scary when you're saying, I don't know. And when you're saying that stuff, I'm like, oh, that's a little exciting. You know, I'm ready to see how that happens, what happens with that, who the next Damask is, you know, whatever. Like, I want to pause here and talk about the Damask thing. Okay. Cause people keep texting me and like, could Damask really come back? I just want to, like, cover it real quick.
You would know better than me, because the comparison I keep seeing people make is to Paolo, and so I don't know if that's legs or not.
I'll just say it this way. I still don't know how Paolo got a sixth year.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm sitting here thinking, these are the pauses I have where I'm like, how can I do this in under 5 minutes? And then I realize I can't. I just have to use 5 minutes. So, you know, you get 4-5 years to play four, right? That's the key to this whole thing, is the clock is 5 years to play four, so you can have one red shirt year in there. That red shirt year could be you were injured the whole year. That red shirt year could just be you were on the bench for the whole year. The reason Tommy DeVito had his waiver denied is because he tried to get a sixth year based on his freshman year at Syracuse being an injury year, excuse me, and not just a redshirt year. And he was unable to prove that he sat out because of some hardship or whatever. It doesn't have to be injury, but it could be hardship of why he couldn't play. If you just sit out for a year, that just burns a year off your clock. You take your redshirt. Now you have 4 years to play for. He got his COVID year, played it at Illinois, tried to get an extra year for the year he sat out in 2018 or whatever, and they denied it. What Paolo had was, so he's 5 years to play four, right? He only plays four games in the 2020 season, and at Rutgers, he tears his ACL. Rutgers was the fourth game that season, and so he did not play more than four games, which means he could take a redshirt. Any player, if they play four or fewer games in football, can take a redshirt. Doesn't necessarily have to be called a medical redshirt. It's just a four games or less means you get a redshirt. You can only do that one time. So Paolo is a five to play four. He played in the COVID era, which means every player is a six to play five, right? So Paolo plays his 4 years, and he gets a bonus year because of COVID, because 2020 didn't count. How did Paolo then play in 2022, which was his sixth year? How did he get a sixth year on the field, which more or less made him play a six to play six kind of guy? Because he used that 2020 season again you know, he already got a waiver for it and played in 21 because 2020, everyone got a waiver. So he used his COVID year in 2021. He then said, right, but in 2021, I also only played 4 games. So even though I already got a waiver for that season, I should get a second waiver for that season in 2022. And the NCAA said yes. And also Michael Marquez did the same thing. He played a 6th year because he had only played 4 games in one of those in the 2020 season. So the thing I've never understood of why the NCAA says yes is because they're using the same year to get 2 bonus years.
Yeah.
So Paltrow played in 17, 18, and 19. So he's burned 3 of his 4 years. He plays in 20, but it doesn't count, which means he gets 21. And then, even though 20 didn't count, he points to the NCAA and says, hey, I only played 4 games. I should get another bonus year based on that one you missed year. And I told anyone who was anyone at the time, you could find a podcast, you can find articles where I said this. I'm like, there's no way the NCAA is going to say, okay, you get 2 bonus years based on the same missed year. You missed out on the experience of college football, so the NCAA gave you a 2021 as a COVID year. And then you're saying the same year you missed out on football because you only played 4 games, and they'll give you another year in 2022. But they did. I don't know how. Like, I still have this thought in my head. Like, I feel like the NCAA was just asleep at the wheel and like, oh, only play 4 games? Yep, give them an extra.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say is kind of a joke. Like, I don't know how it works. Is it like there's like 4 guys in an office that's taking these phone calls? It's kind of like an insurance company. You know, when you're trying to get a claim approved or denied, right. Just someone happens to be in a good mood, like, oh, whatever, I'll stamp that one good. Is there one guy that's like, oh, Paltrow, I took a phone call from my wife, and I got my, I'm looking at some stuff on social media, oh, I'll stamp that one good, and then it just moves on down the line.
Yes.
Or is there like this, a boardroom full of like 12 guys who like lock themselves in like the NCAA tournament committee and debate these individual cases? I don't know. Just don't know how the system works. I don't know.
Right. All I know is that room changed after the Alston case. You know, the NCAA looked at everything differently. And yeah, it might just be that, like, no, we can't. We don't want to be caught saying no to that, so we'll just say yes. But again, Paltrow had to prove that it was an injury. The reason Tommy DeVito didn't get approved is because he just sat out because Syracuse had a senior quarterback that year who was obviously going to start, so DeVito redshirted. And you don't get a bonus year for that unless he could prove, hey, I was actually at a shoulder surgery in September. I couldn't have played if I would. You know, I don't know the details there. But regardless, his was denied. And so
bringing it back to Marcus, are you optimistic then? Or are you just still saying, I have no idea what they're going to say?
I mean, we just saw with Denzel Daxon in football. He got denied, like, going he even had a COVID year he could use. And he got denied an extra year of eligibility for, you know, on the football field. So, you know, I don't think, like, I'm saying the same thing I said back then. Like, for Marcus, his injury year that he's trying to get is the COVID year. COVID year, he only played 10 games. And if he only played 10 games and got injured, then he is eligible for a bonus year. It just so happens that the reason he had an extra year to play at Illinois was because 2020 didn't count. So can he then turn back to 2020? Well, I should say 2021 for basketball. So can he then turn back to 2021, go back to the NCAA as Paltrow did and say, look, I know you gave me a bonus year in 2024 because nobody's eligibility was dinged by 2021. I would also like to use 2021 as my injury year so I can get a 6-year. Worked for Paltrow. I don't know how, but maybe he can. I don't know.
How quickly do they turn those cases over? I mean, like, with the transfer portal being done in less than a month, right? I mean, don't you have to get some sort of resolution on that to know how you're going at the portal? I don't know.
I don't know for basketball. I know for football, because of those decisions, the portal window, the dead period that happens, the new semester enrolling in January where you have to have these decisions because these guys need, you know, the deadline for declaring for the NFL draft, they would have to have these decisions to these guys before they could, you know, DeVito would need to be able to make a decision if he had the eligibility to come back. So I know that they're pretty quick for football. I don't know for basketball because there's no, it's not a semester starting in 3 weeks where a decision has to be made now. I just don't know how they do it.
Yeah, because if we take the approach that that Marcus Domas does get another year at Illinois, then our whole discussion, you know,
sure.
is moot. Right.
We move everything to is he the Big Ten preseason player of the year? Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Let me also just say this, and I don't know if this is I'm shoehorning this in here, this take, since we're talking about the transfer portal. I was going to tweet this the other day, but I just didn't want to invite a huge crap storm. And my mentions and compared to yours are a fraction, but I still figured it was going to invite too much. But it was going to be something along the lines of, apropos of nothing, I am fully in support of this transfer portal ruling that there's no sit out year. I think that's the right thing to do for players. However, I am very uneasy with in-conference transfers. I just don't like the idea of it, even though you can't really change that. I know it's with the how big the conferences are these days, it kind of becomes less of an issue. But I just can't understand the idea of going to war in a conference and then turning around and then playing for another team in that conference and going back to war against those same guys you just played against the year before. I just, that always sits a little bit wonky with me, and that's
yep.
I know that it's going to happen, and there's probably a pretty good chance that we're going to have a player that from our conference, the Big Ten conference, sometime in the next year or two, it'll happen eventually because it has to happen. But that part of the transfer portal just always sits a little weird with me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm totally with you. I said it to somebody is like, picture Trent Frazier in an Indiana uniform. Picture right. Trent Frazier suiting up for Izzo. Like, I can't even imagine that.
I can't fathom it.
I can't even, like, I shake the thought from my head when I try to picture a green uniform on Trent Frazier. But that's the world we're walking into. I mean, yeah. Every time I saw Jameson Battle on Ohio State this year, I'm like, I mean, I know Minnesota's down and they don't really have a big fan base right now, but if I saw something like that, I would just be so disgusted.
Yeah, and I don't get it. But that's me yelling at clouds, and it'll happen sooner than later, and conferences mean less and less. But just, and I'm not going to stop beating around the bush. I'll use AJ Storr as an example. And, of course, I would love that kid on – anybody would want that kid in their team. But – to play for Wisconsin and be as involved in that and watching him celebrate and enjoy the going to war with those guys and then turn around and play for another team in the conference. Just when you go back to Madison, I just don't see how that mindset works. But
Same. Anyway. I mean, yes, we're just a couple guys in our 50s who are just like,
I know, but I got to believe that. Yeah. Again, if you had Steve Bardo on or Kendall Gill, they'd have the same take on that. So, but yeah, those are guys in their 50s too. So,
see, these are the moments when we realize
didn't put on one uniform and then go put on another uniform.
yeah. I don't know. I think I feel like the scary thing. I wish that there was still this rule of one transfer and then you have to sit out the next transfer. I understand why. I understand why the NCAA couldn't enforce that and why with the way things are moving that you can't really do that, but it does kill a lot of what makes college college. You know, I heard some coach, it was just a video clip I saw from one of the NCAA press conferences where he was just talking about imagine if the pros had 1 year free agency. Imagine your favorite NBA team, your favorite NFL team, that the contracts were 1 year. And then everyone could just move to the next team and build a super team over here and that type of thing. Like, that's where we're at right now. And that does scare me a little bit as to... I know it won't work like that. I know you're not going to see every single player in the portal and everybody moving around immediately, and it'll balance itself out. And, you know, it's shown itself now. But the ability to play for four schools in 4 years does scare me a little bit as to the, I don't know, what makes college sports, you know, what we're arguing about as two guys in our 50s and why you're balking at the idea of, you know, we're talking about Trent Frazier in Indiana uniform and that type of thing is a college sports thing, you know, probably even more than the pros. The pros, a guy will leave and like, you're like, hey, I respect that he had to get paid. Our GM wasn't willing to pay him, whatever, that kind of thing. In college, if you lose that and you lose the, you know, we see, you know, I have five classes with Kiwan Garris, and so I imagine myself as one of his friends, and, you know, I'm seeing him, one semester I'm seeing him in a class Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and in a different class Tuesday, Thursday, and it's like, you know, you have this, like, this is my team, and these are my guys, and I go to class with them, and, you know, we're boys, and this is the thing. You know, all of that goes away with Sky Clark playing 1 year at Illinois, 1 year at Louisville, 1 year at UCLA, and then who knows, you know, 1 year somewhere else. It just, you lose that continuity to where maybe a couple fans 20 years from now aren't even talking about how weird it would be for Trent Frazier to be in Indiana uniform, because that's just, you know, what happens. I feel like limiting the second transfer would put a stop to that. You get one chance to move around. If you made a mistake picking your school, you get a second chance, but you don't get four chances. I feel
there's too many variables to play. And so, like you said, it's either you got to go one way or the other. And I think it's in the best interest of the individuals to let it happen. So it's, of course it's going to be that way. But it's still just weird to me. I'm not going to hate it. I would never, you know, it would not feel ill will towards anyone, you know, even if a player from Illinois transferred within the conference. I mean, I say that. I guess it would depend on the circumstances, but it's just like, it was just stuck in my head. Like, I just still can't wrap my mind around transferring in the conference. It's just weird.
Did you see that chart? Somebody put a chart out on Twitter for the Elite Eight, the Elite Eight teams, where their starters started their career.
Yep,
Duke was the only one that had all five. This is our Duke, mostly because they just have, you know, a bunch of one and dones and two and dones.
Purdue had four, though, right?
Yeah, Purdue had four plus Lance Jones. Illinois only had two, Hawkins and Rogers. NC State didn't have a single guy who started his career at NC State. You know, it's just, I don't, you know, I know all of this stuff is happening, but when you see a chart like that, it's like, holy crap.
So, but it's true. But, you know, what do we talk about in college all the time? It's not about the name on the back of the jersey. It's about the name on the front of the jersey.
Yes.
And if they're out there in orange and blue, I'm in.
Yes.
So,
yeah. People said that. You know, look at the embrace Marcus Damas got this year. And that a year ago right now. Yeah, I think it was like April 5th or something like that when he picked Illinois. So it's like, you know, we built all of that in 365 days.
I know.
To become what it was. But then, again, I'm saying, like, you know, it's still just really weird to me how quickly the entire thing changed from, all right, get a team, build a team. I mean, when we hired Underwood, the thought was like, oh, look what he did with the, you know, built around Thomas Walkup at Stephen F. Austin, and he's going to input this, and oh, remember what just happened to South Carolina? You know, he had been an assistant there. What Frank Martin did there, that's what he's going to do here. And once he gets that lead guard and has him for 4 years, you know, we were talking about that at the beginning of Underwood, and now 7 years later, everything is different. Everything is different. To where it's April, what is it, the 5th today, and we have no idea 70% of our scoring next year. We don't even know the names of the players who will score.
Right. It's crazy.
It's insane. Okay, so we've wandered off of therapy session because we don't need it. But what are your, I guess, what are your concerns right now with where we're at? You know, like, we've talked about the overall, like, hey, I feel pretty good. We've done it several different ways, you know, but we have to acknowledge that there are some, like, oh, here's some dangers, or the Big Ten is getting better, or what do we do with a bigger conference, and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
To me, the only danger is if you swing in the transfer portal and you miss, and because it's, you know, you won the lottery last year. What if you win the negative lottery this year, and all of a sudden you're left with your third or fourth options that you wanted to take a swing at in the transfer portal? Now you're a 5-15 team in the Big Ten. I mean, you don't, with the amount of, I mean, there's what, three guys that we know for sure, or not really, not any guys we know for sure are going to be back.
Yes.
The only ones we know for sure are the freshmen coming in.
Yes. I think so. I missed Rogers is who I missed earlier.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yes.
But if you just take, if like, as you would normally do, you'd say, okay, here's what we have coming back. And that's all I can process because it's all I know for sure. And right now that's not an upper division Big Ten roster as it stands. And so until those spots are fixed, that's a concern. It just is, because you don't know. So it's the uncertainty of well, maybe you, yeah, I said earlier, we have a lot to sell in the transfer portal, and we have a solid freshman coming in, but those freshmen aren't going to be likely high impact, enough to be upper division impact type players in the Big Ten as a freshman, as good as Merez will be, most likely. But if we do swing and miss in the portal, then yeah, you're going to have a really down year. So that's my only concern.
Yeah. It, like, I saw the must bust thing today with Musselman going to USC, and it's like, I don't know, that's so weird. Like, I'm there in freaking Des Moines a year ago. They beat us, then they beat Kansas. He's got his shirt off, swinging. The fans are embracing him. And 359 days later, they want him out, and he just takes another job because they had a bad season because they swung and missed in the transfer portal. For the guy known for building teams from transfers before the transfer portal existed, what he did at Nevada and, you know, an entire team of transfers and everything else. So it's just, that kind of thing is hard for me to understand. Like, I don't think that if we swing and miss on the transfer portal, that this fan base would feel toward Underwood like the Arkansas fans felt toward Musk this year. But who knows? Like, it's a brand new world, and it's almost as if the Arkansas fans were saying, you went Elite Eight, Elite Eight, Sweet 16. You should be able to do that all the time. And if you can't do that, we'll get somebody who can, which is insane to me. Right. You know, would Purdue fans have fired Painter in 2021 when he, you know, was nowhere close to the tournament? Like, it's just a crazy, crazy new world.
But that does underscore why it was important to have this year that we had this year, because it's a slippery slope from security to hot seat in this world. I mean, because if you have another year of okay, let's say you lose in the first round of the NCAA, you get upset by a 14 seed Morehead State, and then all of a sudden you swing and miss in the transfer portal, and you go 5-15. Now there's legitimate talk about people saying, hey, what about this? Are we building anything here? But as you win two games, which is kind of crazy. You win three games, span of 10 days, 11 days, and it completely changes the entire outlook of your entire program.
And we're not, yes, I mean, we're not even talking about Kevin Keats here,
right?
An 88% free throw shooter from Virginia, with a chance to ice the game, misses two free throws, and then they hit a bank circle around the rim, in three-pointer to send it to overtime.
When Virginia had fouls to give.
Yes, yes. NC State at that point had a 7% chance to win the game. They pulled it out, and they made the NCAA tournament, and now they're in the Final Four, and Keats is going to get a long extension. Yeah, it's a weird, weird world.
So again, the transfer portal giveth and the transfer portal taketh away, as they say, and that's really my only concern. And it's really only a 1 year concern, because I think that the freshmen coming in are really solid building blocks that you can, you know, if they, if you are able to build with them, I think you're looking at something special, you know, in a couple of years at the latest.
Last point I want to make, I want to go about an hour and we're right at an hour. So I want to make this point. We are one of the top 10 programs in college basketball right now. I started compiling some stats for the 2020s tonight. It'll go, maybe I'll just even put it when I put this podcast up of what the stats are, and I'll put them out on Twitter. But with a conference title, two conference tournament titles, an Elite Eight, five straight tournaments, you know,
a one seed
didn't make it. A one seed. We just are. We're one of the top five. We're one of the top 10 programs right now in college basketball. And in the 2020s. And that means more than you listening to this right now realize. How far we fell from that and where we're at right now. After the first half of the 2020s, we're one of the top 10 programs in college basketball. Again. And that feels good to say. It's not saying it's going to continue. I hope it will continue. I hope it means that in the next five, I mean, I wrote that on Twitter the other day. Like, I do believe we'll make a Final Four in the next 5 years. I believe in this staff. I believe the momentum built by this and by, look, we're going to sell out the entire season probably next year again, just like we did in 2006. You know, we sold out almost every Big Ten game this year. We'll definitely sell out every Big Ten game next year. Like, this thing is rolling again, and the fans are there, the money is there, the support is there. I think the NIL is there, that we can make do damage and really keep this thing rolling with what players we're bringing in. You know, the fan base has always been there waiting to embrace it again, and this Elite Eight meant the embrace is fully locked. So I just want it acknowledged that we're one of the top 10 teams in top 10 programs in college basketball at the moment. We just are. Michigan could have said that in 2021, and now they're nowhere near like that and in shambles, so it could go away quickly. Doesn't mean like we're going to maintain it, but I just want it known and said at the end of our little therapy session that, you know, this is the affirmation you're getting from your therapist. Mm-hmm. We are one of the top 10 programs in college basketball again, like we were in the early 2000s and like we were in the 80s. It's just there. And
no notes. I have no notes to add on that.
Okay. Let's just end it right there.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, there's nothing else to say. We, the University of Illinois, Fighting Illini, are a top 10 program in college basketball.
I love
it. I and I.